Blog Talk Radio.
This is JJ Bomber. You are listening to Well Armed Radio.
Good evening, sheepdogs. Welcome to Well Armed Radio, where freedom is our best friend. Thank you for joining us in our weekly vigorous, relentless, and occasionally ruthless pursuit of freedom. We are broadcasting live from the very Well Armed studio in New Berlin, Wisconsin, and it's always my pleasure to speak with the most informed gun owners in the state. That would be you guys. You are your community's finest. With a face for radio and a voice for silent movies, my name is Nick Clark. I'm the president of Wisconsin Carry and the host of Well Armed Radio, and encourage you to be part of the show with your calls, questions, comments. That's one thing I forgot to do the past couple of weeks, is take some calls or offer to take some calls. So I know the podcast listenership is way up the past few weeks with our shows on the Rittenhouse case. And I don't think Blog Talk gives me a breakdown of live versus podcast, just total listen. So, but yeah, so we'll see what we get, and if anybody has questions, we'll take some of those this week, some call-in questions. Start the show with the usual warning. Oh, let me give you the phone number, 563-999-3787. Again, 563-999-3787. And now I will start the show with the usual warning. No sacred cows here. So we are going to continue what we've been doing the past couple of weeks. This is our third broadcast where we're focusing exclusively on the Kyle Rittenhouse case. The first show, we did a preview, pretrial hearings, stuff like that. The second show, last week, we went over the first part of the prosecution's case. And then I'm pleased to have, and I'll bring live now, Kevin Mathewson, who's the editor with the Kenosha Eye, the Kenosha County Eye, and investigative reporter, criminal investigator also down in Kenosha. He's been in court. He's seen everything that's going on, and he'll be able to provide his perspective. So, Kevin, welcome back to the show. Thanks for being here.
Good evening, Nick. Thanks for having me.
So here we are. The prosecution rested earlier in the week. The defense put their case on. The defense is rested. Friday they had And I missed all of Friday. Friday's the only day I didn't watch as much as I could have. I was out of the office. So Friday, I think they had the discussions with the attorneys and the judge on jury instructions. Is that correct?
Yeah, lesser included and jury instructions, correct.
Let's just hit that one real quick because since we're on it, otherwise I was going to run through kind of chronologically what's gone on this week with the witnesses. But I heard earlier in the week, and this is maybe Court TV, I thought I heard something that they weren't going to include lesser includeds. But that did that change or was there – has anything changed with that?
So the judge did allow lesser charges for, I believe, three of the counts. So for Anthony Huber, that was charged as first-degree reckless homicide, there are now going to be two alternative charges. So jury instructions will be included and sent back with the jury and verdict forms for those two lesser charges. So if the jury finds that the state didn't quite prove first-degree reckless homicide, they can also charge second-degree reckless homicide or first-degree endangering safety. So not really good news for us because, you know, sometimes juries like to find middle ground or they like to, you know, meet in the middle if half of them, you know, kind of agree, half of them don't. But even those lesser included are still multi-decade prison sentences. And obviously the jury is prohibited from knowing how long or what kind of prison sentences they come with. So they won't know that, but there will be some alternatives. I don't know how much it'll move the needle, but and they also allowed the provocation jury instruction. So the jury could find that Kyle provoked the first homicide, which was the homicide of the pedophile, Jocelyn Rosenbaum. So kind of an interesting decision there from the judge. Maybe he's just trying to throw the prosecutor a couple bones since he's been accused of being so partial the defense, but who knows? You know, I think at the end of the day, it's still going to be a win for the big, for the good guys. But
yeah, and I'll say this because there's been a lot of criticism. Well, a lot of positive things said about the judge, and then of course some criticism from the liberal left. But when it comes to being favorable for the defense, I mean, again, in a country where we're innocent until proven guilty, I think every judge should be favorable to the defense. I think every judge should be doing everything they can to give the defense the, you know, advantage. So I don't even think that that's one of the frustrating things I've had this week, and it's not unexpected, but the last couple weeks, is even the news reports that report positive things about the case, like especially Court TV, I think they do a pretty good job of calling balls and strikes and saying that things have gone well for the defense, but saying that things have gone well for the defense versus really saying that, you know, Kyle was acting in self, you know, it just, the whole perspective always seems to be to favor the state and the prosecution and it's hard to even describe because I was sitting here earlier today trying to come up with phrases to describe and examples, but there's just the way that everything is phrased. The perspective always seems to come from favoring the state. The perspective always seems to come from favoring the prosecution's side. And so, you know, in a country where we're innocent until proven guilty, whether it's the phraseology and just semantics, it should be the other way around. It should be, the courts have to be innocent until proven guilty. The public does not, but the courts are, that's the obligation of the courts to assume innocent until proven guilty. But just especially in this case with the, you know, the videos that were out there and the strong self-defense case, I wish that even the liberal news would have come at it from a little bit more of a balanced perspective and they haven't. So again, not unexpected, but you know, we can always sit there and hope for something better out of the liberal left than we did. But I wanted to, I think maybe what it was is sometimes when some prosecutors try cases, they put lesser includeds in the charging documents perhaps. And I wonder if that was what the Court TV people were opining on, and because and Court TV is not necessarily as experienced with Wisconsin specific statutes or practices. Sometimes they're more because of their national coverage, but I wonder if that might've been what it was that they thought. Cause I think when, what was the Minnesota case? Derek Chauvin, I think his case, that they had lesser included in the charging documents. So those are already there. So, but in this case now they're allowing the jury to go for those and then more, not to say after the fact, but in the instructions versus the charging documents. So, backing up, this week, Gross Kreutz for me was kind of the first, big, I mean, he was supposed to be the star witness for the, for the prosecution. And the first thing I thought was, my bias, I've seen his DUI videos. I know what a dirtbag he is and his little buddy that were sitting there when he got pulled over for DUI the comments they're making to the police that were just asshole. And especially his friend. I mean, some of them, during one of the DUI video that I saw, which was actually up from the Kenosha County webpage, he was pretty quiet and, stoic, but his friend was his friend even called to testify? The friend that was with the DUI friend, stop?
I believe that was Jacob Marshall, his roommate. Who lied, he's the guy who posted on Facebook, everybody, Gage is doing okay. He wants you to know he's all right. His only regret was that he didn't empty the magazine into that little fuck and kill him.
Yeah.
And then he testified that he lied. That was just bullshit. He made it up.
And that didn't make any sense when he said that he said that when he was saying that, first that he said that Gage didn't say that he said it. And he said that the reason he said it was because they were getting threats. Now, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, he said it to scare off the bad guys.
Yeah, because if you're getting threats from people, why don't you say, hey, we're armed too? Or, but saying that, to think that threatening Kyle or suggesting even worse things that he wished he had done to Kyle was going to scare people off from that's not even logical. So he's a big fat liar. And I think that was the same guy who in the DUI video that I saw, he was the one just when the police are right there and he's saying to the police, your parents must be so proud. You turned into a dickhead cop. And again, I don't remember the exact words, but he was just being a jackass to the cop and the cops were being pleasant to him. He wasn't under arrest. His friend was, the cops were nice to him. And one second he's this, and then he's like, oh, I know you guys are just doing your job. And then 2 seconds later, he's like, but yeah, fuck the police and you fucking pigs. And
typical drunk. He's just scatterbrain all over the
just
place.
Just a loser. And then I think they offered to give him a ride home and he goes, no, I don't want a ride from you pigs. And then he walks away. But anyway, just a scumbag. And the good thing here for me, and I was going to say later in the show, but the jury not being sequestered, I can't help but think they got to go home, especially after some of the slapdowns that Binger got that they only saw the very first part of, like the objection, and then they're hustled out of the courtroom. But I can't help but think they must go home, and they're not supposed to, but go home and turn on Court TV to see what was said.
And that's the thing, and I'm sure at some point we got to address these two grave constitutional violations committed by T. Claire, and that just shows how you can't, so to speak, unring a bell. So
right.
The first of which, T. Claire said something like, hey, now Kyle, this is the first time that you're telling your story, right? I mean, blah blah blah. And then the jury obviously heard that.
Yeah.
And immediately the judge sent him out of the room.
And let's say that for a second, because let's go through Gross Kreutz first. So this kid, I don't know how old he is, but this dude. So he, first off, his mannerisms, like he, to me, from the word go, he would kind of lean back and turn to the side. So like after every answer, he like looks at the jury. It was like he was coached, I'm sure he was coached, but it just seemed completely rehearsed and fake,
non-genuine for sure.
Yeah. And so he comes up there and he starts talking about how he was, you know, an EMT and he's all this. And then fortunately in Cross, they were able to get the fact that he speaks at some of these rallies and the People's Revolution or whatever it was. And I think gave the jury some idea of what kind of person this dude really is. But yeah, just the weird, odd mannerisms. He was the first witness I thought that really acted like that, where every single thing he would turn away from the person asking questions and not just turn towards the jury, but lean back and around the microphone and then look straight at the jury. It struck me as very calculated and odd. But just some of the comments, go ahead if you had something to add there.
And yeah, he, you know, a lot of times you'll see expert witnesses act in that manner, like the crime lab witnesses or DNA analysts. And they're trained to do that. You know, when they're answering a question that's very, you know, long-winded and very technical,
that's
what they're taught to do. You look at the jury and you kind of walk them through what DNA is and what this means to be excluded, et cetera. But the criminal defense attorneys I work with, they just think that doesn't look organic and it looks bad.
It's
obvious that he was coached. And it's obvious he was coached from the somebody who a civil sense, right? His attorney,
yep.
Kimberly Motley, who's the extreme left-wing
yep.
nut job. They're hoping to get $10 million off the city and $10 million off the county. So they got a pending lawsuit as we speak in federal court, and he knows better. And the defense rightly pointed out that this case, the conclusion of this case, whether it be guilty, not guilty, has a tremendous effect on that civil case, and a verdict stands in between him and, you know, millions of dollars. So he has a lot to gain by lying. And I think it was pretty clear that in some cases he lied, and in some cases he stupidly told the truth. You know,
yeah,
he told the
yeah.
truth to his own peril.
And the cross-examination of him was fantastic. And that was the first time where I thought, man, this is the state's key witness, and he's coming off
yep.
better the cross-examination is coming off better for the defense. And even
yep.
the people on Court TV were saying the same thing. And then, but some of his comments, like he says he didn't draw his firearm with the express intent of using it. I mean, what the fuck is that? Well, then why did you draw it? And of course, Binger doesn't ask,
well, why did he bring it?
Ask any of this. Right. And then he said he would never, I would never use my firearm to harm someone. Then why do you have one? If that's not who I am. If you would never use your firearm, I could never shoot someone. Why do you have a gun if you could never shoot someone? Why do you have had a concealed carry license that was invalid at the time you were illegally carrying? And of course you don't hear that on the news that Grosskreutz was illegally carrying his gun. And of course now he's turned into he's getting his celebrity moment. I think Good Morning America had him on. And I think, you know, so fortunately I think he bought one suit that he's worn for all of them, that the only suit he probably owns and has ever owned, but just
he's gained a few pounds, which, you know, I have too, but yeah, he's definitely
a little
huskier.
His comments that he didn't draw his firearm with the express intent of using it. Oh, I could never shoot someone. I could never harm someone. It's just, it was so phony. Cause again, you don't carry a gun if you don't, aren't willing to use it. And then he says, that was my day was what, a keys, wallet, phone, gun. And then he says,
yep.
that I could, and then later he's like, I could never shoot someone. That's not who I am. Of bullshit. It's just tell the truth, you know? And then it's like all this talk about vigilante, and it's like, who's the vigilante? Kyle ran away from the threats to him. All of the threats that came at Kyle, he ran away from until he couldn't.
And
he told
Gage, right on Gage's own live stream, he said, you know, I'm on my way to the police. I shot somebody. And, you know, Gage, you shot somebody? Where? You shot somebody? So he tells Gage he's going to the police. He runs towards this endless, vast sea of blue and red flashing lights, and Gage is still trying to tell us, oh, I thought he was an active shooter. I was going to stop him, whatever kind of nonsense he made up.
And what we've said before, I think it was the last week's show, we said, look, even if Kyle was an active shooter, he wasn't active at the moment. And so in the use of deadly force protocol, the use of deadly force hierarchy, you know, be innocent of instigation, no lesser force will do grave danger, great bodily harm must be imminent. You know, those conditions weren't met. Kyle was running away from him, wasn't pointing his gun at anybody. He wasn't an active shooter at that moment, and I don't think he would ever request. But if at any time anybody ever uses their gun in self-defense, then suddenly they're an active shooter. Well, shit, that's pretty bad for concealed carry people across the millions of them across the country, that the minute you use your gun, the mob can assume you're an active shooter. That's just, yep. that can't be a standard. But that's what the media is pushing with, is he was an active shooter. But, you know, Kyle ran away from Rosenbaum. Kyle was running away from Grosskreutz, and it wasn't until he's on the ground, you know, the guy who swings at Kyle and knocks him down or misses or knocks his head off, whatever, he was running towards Kyle. Dropkick guy was running towards Kyle. Skateboard boy, Huber, he was running towards Kyle and swung at him. None of those guys were in any danger. They all ran towards Kyle. And all this talk about Kyle looking for trouble, and all this, the people that ran, all these other people, Huber, Grosskreutz, Jumpkick boy, the guy who took a swing at him, who I don't think we know his name, but just and missed or whatever as he's running down.
Yep.
You know, they all ran towards us. Those are the vigilantes. The mob was the vigilante in this situation. They're the ones that he's going to the police, but that wasn't good enough for the mob. They're going to – and that's that mob mentality. That's the lawless mob mentality that was out there that night with these people that were – you know, and even watching some of the videos over and over and seeing the people, you can tell how much the mob has been empowered by the left and by both the left politicians and by the media in this country, because then they'll sit in there and they'll chant, you know, protect your business, not the streets. Like, who made the streets? Who deeded the streets to the mob? Who deeded the streets to the protesters? Those are not your streets. Those are everybody's streets. If the people who are armed wanted to be on the street, that right. But the mob felt so entitled because of the media, because of the lefty politicians. They just felt so entitled and enabled to that those were their streets and protect your business, not the streets. And so, I mean, you know, those guys that ran after Kyle, they made a grave mistake and they attacked someone who was no threat to them. And no imminent threat to anybody else. And they were the vigilantes and they were the mob. And so, yeah, I mean, Grosskreutz, taking the life of another is not something I was capable of comfortable doing. I mean, that, and he said, this, I wrote some quotes down from, that's my life's ethics code. Again, then why carry a gun? Why draw the gun, you lying piece of garbage?
Yeah, why bring the gun? Why draw it? Why even have ammo in it? If it's just there to be this deterrent, you leave it empty. And you oppose the taking of a life, don't even put a bullets in it. I mean, it'd be lighter, it'd be easier to carry. Then you're sure that it won't go off on accident. Nobody believes him. Let's just put it that way. Yeah. But I want to back up in something that I found to be quite swampy. So we know that a couple weeks after the riot, Gage was arrested for DWI, his second, actually. And this case just was very, like I said, it just stunk from the beginning. And what we saw was we saw him get arrested just, like I said, early September or October, right after the riots. And it took the DA. So I found out about his arrest. I was tipped off. I contacted the chief. I think it was the New Berlin police chief. Hey, what's going on? I said the guy was arrested 4 months ago. He hasn't been charged. What's the deal? And the chief was pretty blunt with me, or pretty, what's the word I'm looking for, candid with me, and said, hey, look, we got the blood sample back months ago. We sent the referral to their office. We don't know why he hasn't been charged. We don't have any comment. We can just tell you that we arrested him. We found probable cause. He blew, I think, a point. I think it was almost three times the limit. And so it was just suspicious.
Like 0.18 or something, yeah.
Yeah. Right from the beginning, it was just suspicious. Well, then his lawyer at the very first hearing says to the court commissioner, this is a unique case, Your Honor. And I'm thinking to myself, no, it's not. This is a right out of the gate classic example of a DUI second. I mean, the guy was driving. He didn't use his turn signal. He was pulled over. He was drunk as hell. You know, we have body camera that shows everything. I mean, this is not a unique case. What do you mean it's a unique case? And I asked that attorney about it. She says, oh, you're taking my words out of context. What I really meant, it was unique because we asked for his address to be sealed because he's getting death threats. Well, no, they asked for his address to be sealed so they could put on the record that he was this heroic quote, victim of the Kenosha shooter. So then on just the week before he was scheduled to testify, you know, this ultra-liberal judge, Jack Davila of Milwaukee, dismisses this case with prejudice 1 week before Gage was scheduled to take the stand. And as you know, any witness with a pending criminal case has to answer for that case. They don't have to talk about the details, but the defense could have said to Gage, "Now, isn't it true you have an open case against you at this time?" "Well, yes, I do." "Well, what is that for?" "Oh, DUI second." Okay, that's where it would have ended, but it would have gone to his credibility, and it would have showed the jury that this guy not only has one, but two DUIs. But this Evers appointee judge just gave this big, huge favor to the prosecution, really. So Gage didn't have to talk about anything. In fact, he only had to admit to one of his convictions because the judge just decided the other ones were too old.
Yeah, and if anybody thinks that phone calls weren't made there, they're naive and yeah. So yeah, and the cross of Grosskreutz was very, very good. I mean, it was fantastic. He lied to the police about having the gun in his hand. He even lied on the stand and said that he didn't have the gun while he was running, and then they showed the video of him reaching behind and pulling it out. He wouldn't acknowledge, and here's the other thing, he wouldn't acknowledge that he was chasing the defendant. Multiple times they said, "You were chasing him." He said, "No, I wasn't chasing him." And so it was like, just plain, we're like, okay, so you were running the same direction as him.
Exactly.
But you weren't chasing him. And that's really damages his credibility in front of the jury. Cause like if you just tell the truth when it's something that's just true, because otherwise you just look like a liar. It's not a game of what you can avoid saying and then winning the word game. It's how do you appear to the jury? And he looked like a big fat liar when he wouldn't even acknowledge that he was, and even things that are unfavorable to Kyle, he just said, "Yeah, he acknowledged them because if they're going to be proven anyway," and it's, then you just acknowledge it. And, in direct testimony, he said he was there of his own accord and he was just an EMT. But on the cross, he admits that he's associated with the People's Revolution and that he made the comments about the revolution must continue and that he's spoken at the People's Revolution rallies. And so
long live the revolution. He screamed to the attendees of that rally. Long live the revolution.
And people from the People's Revolution were in court. The defense attorney got that to say.
Yeah, they're not hard to miss. I mean, these are face tattooed, bonkers looking people.
Yeah, the piercing through the nose, kind of crap. And and then Gage, the fact that he's suing for $10 million, very good on the cross there, Rittenhouse's attorneys. And then Gage equivocates and says he doesn't know if he stands a better chance of winning his $1 million. Again, don't be an idiot. The jury isn't stupid. Everybody knows it's good for you if Kyle's convicted. So he's just letting the jury knows he's bullshitting and damaging his own credibility. There's just no benefit in lying. Just say, "Well, yeah, I mean, it's, it's better for the case if Kyle is convicted." And then he says that he has no regrets, which again, I mean, laughable if I'm on the jury. And then he says that he felt an imminent danger, he was going to get shot. And it's like, so Kyle points a gun at him, doesn't shoot after he chased Kyle down, and he felt he was in imminent danger, but he chased Kyle down with a mob of people surrounding him, people hitting him in the head, jump kick guy knocked to the ground. And then Gage points a gun at Kyle, and Kyle's not supposed to feel like he's in imminent danger of getting shot. If Gage thought he was in imminent danger of getting shot after chasing someone down and then having a gun pointed at Gage, then him pointing the gun at Kyle, it has to go the same way. And again, the difference between the two, because it's not a moral equivalence, is Kyle didn't chase you down. You chased him down.
Well, and according to T. Claire, though, one gun is far superior to the other. So, I mean, if somebody points a pistol at you, you really shouldn't be afraid, but a scary AR-15 style weapon with 30 rounds, I mean, that's way more scary, is what the point he was trying to make.
And T. Claire, I don't think he used the term firearm once. I think he called it AR-15 every time he referred to it.
We should have made a drinking game out of every time he said 30 round or AR-like. open up your Hangouts. I sent you something that I want to talk about when you get a second. The interesting thing that I'll be investigating over the next week is, so I wrote a couple stories about Gage on the Kenosha County Eye, and he actually was brave. This guy is he can't censor himself. He actually sent me a picture of his concealed carry license, and he said, "Hey, dude, I'm legal to carry, right?" So I'm sitting here and I'm, you know, I looked at his concealed carry and it looked legit. And I'm thinking, man, maybe this guy somehow did get a concealed carry. And it was issued, according to this image, in January of 2018 and it expired. It is planned to set to expire in January of 2023. So we're talking about 2 years or a little less than 2 years from now. And if you remember, Binger asked him if he had a concealed carry license at the time. And he said yes, which I guess technically is true. He had the physical license. Maybe it's possible. But then, you know, T. Clair says, well, was it valid? He said, no, it was expired. And then T. Clair said, well, had you renewed it? And he said, no. So only one thing can be true. Either this is some kind of forgery of a concealed carry license that he conjured up to silence his critics, or somehow it got taken away from him at some point after this was issued. And it would not have been an expired license, but it would have been revoked or suspended.
Revoked, right. And I wondered the same, and I don't know if, because there's things that they couldn't bring in, like, for example, Rosenbaum's previous convictions, because, you know, you tell everybody he's a chomo and people would have been like, oh, glad he's dead, you know. But right. The jury would have. But so because Binger opens the door asking about his concealed carry license, and then he says, well, it expired. And this is probably information that maybe the defense attorney didn't know and couldn't know because they can't research this. And the only way that you and I know is because Gage is dumb and sent it to you. But
right.
if that would have opened the door for him to be able to say, why is it expired? Because, you know, if it was, or you know, did you not renew it? Or did it, you know, and at least get him on, I mean, and not that, who knows, I mean, the Kenosha DA is not going to charge him with perjury, even though he has perjured himself.
Never, never. But he could say that, he could give him a false name. There's nothing he could have said, no matter how egregiously false, would the DA ever charge him with anything.
But I wonder if that would have opened up the door for, in terms of the admissibility or the allowability of that line of questioning, because Binger opened the door for it.
And I think it would have, but I think the defense is very careful. Unlike T. Clair, they're very careful not to get anything into evidence that they can't, that they aren't allowed to. So
yeah.
In this case, they might have been thinking, we don't want to tread on this, you know. And at the end of the day, it goes to the fact that he was lying, but I think we got that in. I think it was any reasonable juror knew that he was lying about other things anyways. You know, like when he says, I wasn't chasing him. I was just running in the same direction at high speed. Well, were you closing in on him? Was the gap shortening? Yes. Okay, so you were behind him running in the same direction and the gap was closing, but you don't call that chasing? Well, no.
Chasing, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he was believable anyway, so I think there wasn't much missed on that, but I'm just curious for the fact of, I mean, photoshopping a concealed carry license, it's got to be some type of crime. And
yeah,
so
I plan to look into this. I think it's a valid license, or excuse me, I think that's his real license that was revoked.
That's what my gut tells me. And anybody knows. Let's just look at a driver's license, okay? You know, if your birthday is coming up and your birthday comes and goes, and the following week you're like, oh shit, I got to go to the DMV. My license is expired. There's a big difference getting caught pulled over with an expired license by, let's say, a week or two, or a suspended/revoked license. Huge difference. Expired license just meant you forgot to go pay the $20 and it's no big deal. Most cops, if it's under a month, they'll just send you on your way. So there's a huge difference between an expired CCW license and a suspended/revoked CCW license. So my gut tells me there may be some kind of out-of-state type of legal issue that he had, or maybe all of this prompted the DOJ just to say, hey, look, is this the type of guy we want to have a concealed carry? Because I believe he was convicted for that burglary back in 2015, and I believe the burglary was in 2012. In 2015, that's when he was arrested in charge.
Because I know some of them did. Among his previous convictions, was there something with some kind of domestic? I forget, because I know one of them did. I don't know if it was Huber or...
Yeah, he did. So Gage in 2012 had a simple assault DV enhancer, which I believe is exclusive of being able to get a...
Correct.
That
would, and I know at some point the DOJ went back and started looking at those closer, and that may be what happened here is they went back and looked...
2012, he was charged with, and I believe, convicted with a felony. 2013, criminal damage to property. 2014, he was arrested, charged with DUI, possession of a firearm by a felon, possession of a firearm while intoxicated, endangering safety, and he had some warrants, right? He blew twice the legal limit. There's a possibility that either the police misinterpreted his rap sheet from 3 years ago then, or he was a felon at the time, and had since gotten that expunged. So we have so much incomplete information here, but I think there's something to be said. I don't think that he had an expired CCW. I think it was revoked or suspended. So it's my intention at some point, just because I'm an asshole like that, is I'm going to send the transcript once I can get it. I'm going to send this a copy of this CCW he sent me. I'm going to send it to the DOJ Firearms Unit and say, hey, look, can you please figure this out? Because they can't tell us, you know, if it's valid, if it's not valid, when it's all that stuff's exempt under public records. But if I make them aware of this guy saying under oath it was expired, maybe they might take issue with that and start their own investigation as to A, did he lie under oath, or B, is there something else fishy going on that, you know, only they know?
Yeah. Question for you, because if I got my stuff out of order, when the chunky ADA there was another witness who described himself as an amateur photographer. I think that's Nathan DeBruin, correct?
Yeah, that's him.
Was he a state witness, or was he one of the defense witnesses?
He was a defense witness.
Okay. So, and the first person the defense calls was Kyle, correct?
He was very early, but I don't think he was the first. Yeah, he was pretty early. I think there were at least two or three witnesses before him, including Gage's shithead neighbor, former roommate.
The assistant, correct? Oh yes, that was and then who gets up there and when he visits him and lies about what he had. I thought that was a great way, because he obviously didn't want to perjure himself, and
well,
he knew that they had it, so he had.
Anytime you can show the jury that a witness was either lying then or is lying now, I mean, both can't be true, right? It can't be true that Gage said that. And it can't be true that, oh, no, I made it up. So he was able to be pointed out as a liar. So, I mean, that's never good. So all these people just showing how, you know, they have no integrity is just so helpful for the defense, because we're not dealing with stand-up citizens here.
Well, yeah. When the prosecution rested, I remember the people on Court TV saying, like, you know, that was it. They, you know, that was, if that's all they have, then people start talking about the motion for a directed verdict and all the stuff that it, but then,
which they did not make.
Yeah. One of the things that I think the highlight of the prosecution case was during the opening statement where Binger said that Rosenbaum was shot in his back. I think that was the highlight of their case. I think that was the top point of where he had the strongest, because that was the only aha moment, the only, you know, that was the only thing was that Rosenbaum was shot in the back, and that was a part of his opening statement. And then of course when you get the more detailed testimony of that wasn't even you know, some great, it's not like, you know, the circumstances didn't make sense for him to be, you know, it's that, you know, during
the medical examiner, he did not mince words. He said, this is what happened. He was shot in the back technically, but it was while he was horizontal and the shooter was shooting horizontally. I mean, that's so, another thing. I mean, when a jury hears something like, you know, the defendant chased the, you know, Mr. Rosenbaum down and shot him in the back, that's something that they're going to be watching for. You know, you can't say that and then not have them looking for that, because that is so egregious sounding that now the jury is thinking, wait a second, what you said on the first day, there's nothing close to that in the evidence.
The fat assistant district attorney, I thought was just badgering a witness, the skinny video journalist. And again, I think that's Nathan DeBruin, who had a little bit of a speech impediment. But Nathan seemed to me like he's a very nice guy. And it's just my perception that the jury wouldn't take well to the way that he was being treated, because he seemed like a nice guy. And again, maybe the little speech impediment makes him a little bit more endearing, because he doesn't come off as some, you know, polished, you know,
right,
smooth, slick talk and whatever. He just seemed like, Nathan seemed like a nice guy, and for the ADA, and just genuine. And like, I think, and I don't remember if it was Bing or the ADA, other ADA, who said that, you know, if he said that you're biased in this case, or if you care who's convicted, and he said, no, I don't care. You know, he just seemed very genuine. And the ADA seemed like they're trying to put witnesses on trial for, you know, I didn't think that was pretty well with the jury.
There's a story there, and I'll try to tell it quickly, but his family reached out to me. They know that I'm not afraid to take on the man, so to say. I'm kind of known as being kind of outspoken. You know, when I was an alderman, I didn't give a shit. I went after, I didn't care if it was the DA, a judge, whatever. I wasn't afraid. They knew that. So his family called me out, called me up, and they said, hey, this is what's going on. I said, I need to talk to your son. I talked to him. I interviewed him, talked to him about these terrible things that DA assistants were doing. And he was nervous because, you know, this is a kid that went down there to take photos. He's amateur photography, hopes to be professional one day. And, you know, remember, I was a wedding photographer for 12 years. So I'm, you know, in that field. And so I sat down with him. He told me what happened. And I said, you know what? I said, I'm not trying to scare you, but I said, you really need to get an attorney for this, because if they're making these threats, like you say, and they're trying to get you to change their story and you're refusing to, they're not going to like that. So I introduced him to an attorney. He hired and retained attorney that I work for and trust, and he felt a lot better. So then when I wrote that article that I'm sure you read about, Binger trying to get him to change his story and him standing firm, no, I'm not changing my story. And then basically, oh, okay, well, we're going to give you the Richards then. I'm sure he'll call you, and he's going to be a lot meaner than we would have been. And we were hoping to forge a good partnership, you know, in this case, just using all those dirtbag terms. And so obviously the prosecution, they're probably listening to this. Thanks for reading, T. Claire and James. Always good to have you contributing to my ad revenue. But they did a 180. They turned, they stopped trying to prove Kyle guilty, and now they're starting their own defense to try to prove that they weren't engaged in misconduct with this witness. So they really weren't asking questions about what he observed or what he photographed, but it was just, you know, we didn't ask you to change your story, did we? Well, yes, you did. I mean, and that was just a zinger that even the reporters, you know, the mainstream media, fake news, they kind of gasped together, like, wow, that guy doesn't care, you know?
Yeah, and so Krause, the fat ADA, he even starts, at one point I just felt like he was losing it, because he starts saying, that gossip site. I mean, he seemed like he was seething mad and just losing. And that's what happens when people start speaking out of anger. They lose their common sense and their inhibitions and their rational thought, and he just seemed like he was losing it, and he was going off on you,
I have at least three or four current criminal defense cases in which he's the prosecuting attorney. And do you know what that son of a bitch does? is when he knows that I'm on a case for a defense attorney, he puts me on the witness list. So what that does, and he has me subpoenaed for a case that I'm working with the defense attorney. So what that does is it prohibits me from sitting second chair. So a lot of times these attorneys will have me sit what's called second chair. I did on a homicide trial a few months ago where, you know, I put on a suit, I sit next to the attorney. I help with organization of documents, remembering facts, et cetera. And every time I'm subpoenaed, I can't do that because I can't be in the room. I have to be excluded. And he does that shit on purpose, and these attorneys are noticing it. And so there's an active complaint with the Office of Lawyer Regulation right now for him doing that. And as you remembered, he put me on the Rittenhouse witness list, which I'm sure he was hoping that I wasn't going to be able to be in court to cover the shenanigans. But he didn't follow through with it, probably because of my complaint. But he just started slamming my website, and naturally, everyone around the world was like, okay, what is he talking about? So they're Googling De Bruin. They look at my website, and Jack Persobiak started tweeting out my website, and he started tweeting the article. It broke my damn website, Nick. My website was down for like 25 minutes, and people are texting me, hey, they're talking about you on Court TV. I'm like, yeah, I'm in court. I can't text back. And I got to say, that guy made me a few hundred bucks. Because in that hour, I had hundreds of thousands of views, and I can tell which ads are clicked links they're clicking on. I made some money because I have that Google contract with the ads, until somebody will call Google one of these days and tell them I'm fake news, whatever. But he made me some money because, like you said, he took it personally, and he wasn't using that witness to prove his case. He was using that witness to prove that they weren't committing misconduct, and it blew up in their face. And, you know, the memes out there about this photographer. So, you know what, I'm going to plug it, if you don't mind, on your program. But he launched a website called Photos by Nate, N-A-T-E-D like dog, Nate De Bruin, photosbynatedee.com. And you can go on there and you can see the pictures he took during the riot. And I have been getting so many emails from people that want to contribute to this legal fund or buy his photos, that I'm like, hey man, you got to just start a website because I'm sick of fielding all these calls. He did, and you can go there, and you know, this is a patriot. This is somebody who, you know what, was indifferent to the case at first, indifferent to the prosecution of Kyle, and I can tell you now, he sees just firsthand how these snake prosecutors, especially T. Claire, he's got a bad taste in his mouth, and this poor kid had no involvement in the case other than he just happened to be a witness. So it was a shame what they did to this young man. And I'm glad that the memes are making them look like a couple of idiots, because that's what they are.
That's what they are. Yeah. And just Binger's whole attack, his whole angles, it all seemed to hinge on this lefty perspective that rioters have the right of way, and that attempting to stop fires, et cetera, that makes you in the wrong, not the rioters. And just the whole perspective, it was just this, it had this tone of victim blaming, where Binger's line of questioning seems to want to suggest that because Kyle was there, he shouldn't have been allowed to defend himself. It just like as if, you know, hey, miss, if you wouldn't have gone to that club, you wouldn't have gotten raped. You know, what were you doing out late drinking after midnight at a club? You know, if you would have stayed home, you wouldn't have gotten raped.
If you wouldn't have worn that push-up bra. You know,
that miniskirt, you know, it's just – so I don't know. And the news media, and then people sitting there saying – oh, well, yeah, maybe he had a right to be, because I even saw this on some of the people from Court TV, like, yeah, maybe he, you know, had a right, maybe it was self-defense, but I mean, really, what was he doing there? And I thought, how come when 13-year-olds carjack and recklessly drive and kill people in Milwaukee, no one on the news says, you know, where are the parents here? But a 17-year-old goes to Kenosha to clean graffiti and stays. And that's another thing people don't, I think, realize. The news media says his mom took him to – they make it sound like his mom drove him there at 7 o'clock that night, drops him off with a gun. Instead, he was there earlier in the day to clean – she took him there to clean graffiti, and he stayed after being asked to help protect a business, which was another witness when the defense called one of the owners of CarSource, and he looked like the big liar that he was. I mean, that they didn't have, you know, permission and his blessing to be there. But, you know, the left – all of a sudden is sanctimonious about parenting when it comes to this situation. And Republicans too, I don't know how come when Republicans question the irregularities, to put it mildly, of an election. You know, they're promoting insurrection, but now the left is on full attack trying to discredit this judge and sow discord to incite mob violence, I think, after a not guilty verdict. And that's just journalism. But like, if, you know, Republicans question the integrity of an election and they're promoting insurrection, but now everybody's attacking this judge and trying to discredit the judge and sow discord before the verdict is even issued. And that's just journalism. We're so used to it, but it's, then again, you still sit in here and it's hard to believe how massive the double standard is, how massively hypocritical the left is. And it just, you know, so I don't know. With the prosecution case, I think on cross-examination, when Kyle's attorney says, so Kyle didn't shoot you until you advanced on him, pointed a gun at his head, or Kyle didn't shoot you when you were, you know, stepped back or whatever, but then it wasn't until you advanced on him and had a gun pointed at his head that he shot, and he says yes. And it was like, you know, case closed on that shooting.
You know, that would have been, if that would have been a movie, or if you would have had somebody like me who's got no filter as a lawyer at that time, I would have looked at the judge and said, hey, Your Honor, do we have to proceed? I want to go home for lunch. Do we have to continue? It's just one of those things. It's
question for you. Jump Kick Boy was black, correct?
Yes.
Or hard to tell.
Well, you got to be careful, because Jump Kick Man is a microaggression. Krause says he doesn't like that. He prefers Blue Hoodie Man. Just so you know, he can't describe him by what he attempted to do, but only by how he appears.
My perception is, and I'm not there, but the attempt by the left to really turn this into a race thing just isn't there, because to me, I feel like all the race hustlers are down in Georgia right now. And I think the Ahmaud Arbery case has them down there. And there's no, besides the fact that this involved a Black Lives Matter quote protest, none of the dead are black. And I thought to myself, thank goodness Kyle missed Jump Kick Boy when he shot, because then there would be a dead black youth. I don't know how old Jump Kick Boy was, but I don't think he was very old. And then just that fact, I think, would put a whole different level of attack from the left, from the race hustlers on this one. But
you are not kidding, because I thought to myself, thank God they were white. And I hate to say that, but there would have been so much more violence and bloodshed if it would have been actually a case about race. I mean, we all know.
Yeah. Oops, I think I lost you there, Kevin. If you can still hear me, I don't know if you.
Oops, sorry, I muted myself. Right.
I was gonna say, yeah, you lost. Okay, go ahead.
You're right. That's just their last ditch attempt to kind of make this about race. I mean, the only shooting I've ever heard of is a white guy shoot two white guys, and they say it's about race. Well, it's not. And any little sliver of a chance to make it about race, they go all out. And, you know, thank God there were not any black people shot, because we would have seen more bloodshed and violence. And it's just, yeah, but you're right. I mean, they like to refer to him because, you know, he was a black man, you know, that was trying to stomp a 17-year-old face into the concrete, which they try to downplay that. Oh, so he may have tried to kick you a little bit, No, he tried to stomp Kyle's face in.
That was where Kyle's testimony was so good. And first off, so they call Kyle to testify, and I'm like, okay, here's, and then, I mean, the numbers on the live feeds for all these view online sources must have just spiked, because I feel like everybody was then watching that. I mean, such genuine emotion. Like, you cannot fake Kyle's, you know, and it was clear. Anybody who's ever been in such a stressful situation, you know, car accident, like when my daughter got hit by a truck, and then just the first time I had to retell the story, you don't even expect it. And then all of a sudden you're just
right
there, and boom, you can't fake that emotion. Then, you know, whether it's LeBron James saying, oh, that kid ate a bunch of lemon. I mean, just the jury, I was going to ask you, cause you were in the room, like how did the jury react when Kyle breaks down in the stand? Cause that was very genuine. I mean, there was no way
it was rehearsed. And this goes back to, I think we talked about this last week or the week before, is hours after Kyle had to defend himself, he was a wreck. He was vomiting at the ENIAC Police Department. He was having panic attacks. I mean, we saw a broken kid. We saw a kid who finally had a chance to think about what had happened, and he realized he had taken two lives, right? And he was upset. He was crying. People were making fun of him, of course, on the left. What would you, you know, if he wouldn't have said a word, if he would have been stoic and emotionless, they would have said, oh, he's a cold-blooded killer. Look at it. He's not even upset. But instead, we saw somebody who acts like a normal human being. And I think I use the analogy, me and you, like, you know, we're a man's man, right? If somebody broke into our house and threatened our kids, we wouldn't hesitate to, you know, splatter their brain cells all over the wall. But we would feel bad afterwards. We'd realize we took a human life, even though it was necessary. And rather them than us, it's still a very sad situation that you would have PTSD and you would be upset about it. You know, same as these guys who go into the army and they're, you know, big strapping dudes who, you know, they have to take lives. And sometimes that takes a toll on their mental health. No different with Kyle. So,
yeah,
you know, I was sitting next to his mother for the entire trial, and she lost it. Because, you know, she's having to hear her son talk about how he thought he was going to die, and these mean, terrible, violent career criminals were trying to kill him. She lost it. He lost it. And, you know, some of the jurors were on the brink of losing it themselves. It's only human to have empathy for somebody who had to go through something like that.
Yeah, and, I mean, I was choked up watching him, and I just, because I've talked to, you know, probably about a dozen people who've used their gun in self-defense, and several of those to deadly consequences, and some of them, I mean, these are younger, older, and it affects everybody. I mean, when they, you know, something like that, just the gravity of the situation, like Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman said, he's like, unless you're a sociopath, the human beings are not, it's not normal to take another's life. And that has a profound effect on you. And that's why soldiers coming back from war have such, you know, the issues that they have to deal with, because it's not unless you're a sociopath, that's not something that you can process and just shrug off. It's just not. And
exactly.
So, I mean, Kyle, I thought, did fantastic in his testimony and direct. When you talk about, you know, Binger wanting to, like, well, or you said, look, if Kyle would have been perfectly composed up there, they would have said he's a cold-blooded killer. And then because he wasn't dull, see, he's young, he was naive, he shouldn't have been there. But Binger wanted to have it both ways. I made a note on this one, when he starts talking about the bullets. And then Binger starts, there was times where I thought Binger is testifying himself. Like, he's offering testimony, like, about, he's not a ballistics expert, and he's saying, oh, this is about a full metal jacket. And then when he talked about the full metal jacket versus hollow points, and he said he was trying to make the point, and then I think finally the defense objected, but it seemed like he was trying to make the point that that full metal jacket will pass through one target and to another, and that would put others at risk. And then I think that might have had to do with the charge about putting McGinnis in danger, is what Binger was trying to cling to. But I bet if Kyle had used hollow point instead of full metal jacket, Binger would have turned around and tried to make the case that hollow points are more deadly and more, you know, he would have tried to do, it was just like Binger was trying to throw anything at the wall to make it stick, to just slander Kyle, to just, you know, throw mud at Kyle, to just, and it's, some of it seems so petty. And, you know, mocking him, like you say you were going to put out fires. Like, well, no, he actually did put out fires, you know, to put out fires. Like, Binger would even acknowledge things that we all know. Oh, so you say to put out fire, you know, just, it was just, I don't know. I couldn't help but thinking that Binger came off smug to the jury as well. And I don't think that, it seemed like Binger at times was trying to play like he maybe knew he was going to lose the case, and he was trying to more play to the lefty media and the lefty people that he was going to come encounter with to get the, like, I could see some of the comments Binger making, the hardcore lefties being like, yeah, you tell him, Binger, but that wasn't the audience he needs to play to. He needs to play to the jury. And I don't think that's the reaction they were going to have, that, oh yeah, good one. Yeah, you really got it. Cause there's, and this is a thing more in politics, where sometimes, whether it's like at a debate where the one candidate really insults the other one, and it really plays well to the hardcore, like, example, if a Republican, excuse me, if a, like when Biden and Trump were at a debate, and Biden said, "Will you just shut up, man?" Oh, the left loved that. Oh, that was so awesome. Yeah. But those are the people already voting for Joe Biden. But to the people in the middle, I thought that would have come off very, very unprofessional. And like, so the same thing here. I felt like Binger was making comments that to the hardcore lefties would come off like, oh yeah, good one. Yeah. But then to the people who are trying to be rational and objective and analyze this thing, it came off, snarky and offensive. And again, like he didn't know the audience he was playing to. And so instead of trying to play to the jury with the case maybe he feels like he can't win, he's just going to score points amongst the liberal elites that, well, at least you look good for the MSNBC.
Well, yeah, and the scouts from MSNBC and CNN looking for legal analysts, you know, maybe they'll offer T. Clair a job, and maybe that's what he's looking for. Maybe he's done working for the DA's office and he wants to be on TV where he can gel his little Johnny Bravo-like hair.
Yeah,
and, you know, you're right, though. And I don't think Richards really knew the difference between the two types of MO2. Because remember, Richards is a Democrat. He's a sharp attorney and he's looking out for his client's best interest. But don't forget, he is a Democrat. So I don't think he knows the difference either between the Full Metal Jackets and the hollow points. And you nailed it. If Kyle did have hollow points, and remember, this is back in the summer of 2020. I don't know if you could get 223 hollow points if you went to every store within 100 square mile radius. I mean,
yeah.
It's just,
yeah.
They weren't available. Right.
Yeah.
And so if he had hollow points, they would have gone into depth and had an expert explain about how much they mushroom and they cause more damage. So either way he was, you know, no matter what kind of ammo he used, they were going to use it against him. But isn't Full Metal Jacket what was agreed to in the Geneva Convention because they're less lethal? I mean, it's the idea that, you know, if I was going to be shot by anything, I'd rather it be a 223 Full Metal Jacket in and out, right?
Right.
That's what I'd rather be shot with. But Gage was just shot so close that, like he said, his bicep was pulverized, which, by the way, there's now a Twitter page called Gage Grosskreutz Vaporized Biceps. So that's something to check out. It's pretty hilarious.
That's kind of like
the digger at the Suez Canal. Remember that issue when that big bolt got stuck? So
a comedic
page. But yeah, I mean, Kyle did a good job, and you asked about the jury during the examination of Kyle by the defense, that they were taking notes. And this, I think I told you last week, it's a very attentive jury and they're taking lots of notes. They seem to be paying attention very steadfastly. And when Binger was badgering Kyle over and over, they did not like that. They put their pads down. They rolled their eyes. They weren't really looking or watching. They were interested. I mean, they saw this, you know, he's a 52-year-old man just going at this 18-year-old kid who I'm thinking now they're starting to really feel sorry for this kid. And they realize what he had to do is not something that's fun either. And so they were really disinterested in the cross-examination of Kyle because I just think they've had enough. And the case has already been decided by the reasonable ones on the jury. I'm just afraid that there could be one or two that might hold out. And I think that's the only issue we might run into is one or two will hold out. You know, one of those, well, I don't care what the law is, you know, I'm going to vote on what I think the law ought to be. And, but then the judge will give the dynamite instructions, you know, you got to come to an agreement. So I hope there's a unanimous verdict of not guilty. And, you know, the funny thing is that we can't overlook is, These two idiots forgot to introduce evidence that the curfew was enacted, right? So at the conclusion of the state's evidence, the defense made a motion to dismiss the curfew violation. And they kind of got caught with their pants down thinking, oh, crap, you know. So they said, well, yeah, we talked about how there was a curfew. Well, yeah, you talked about how there was a curfew, but did you talk about how it was implemented, if it was even implemented legally? Because we know now it was illegally implemented. I think the sheriff, who's a Democrat with an R in front of his name, put a tweet out and put it on Facebook. You know, there's a curfew starting at 8. But it was later decided by the chief judge that that wasn't anywhere near a legal implementation. So all those hundreds of tickets got thrown out. So eventually it was going to get thrown out anyways, but the judge threw it out. There was no evidence presented. Same thing with the gun charge. So the affirmative defense with the gun charge is that it was under 16 inches or 16 inches or under. And the prosecution forgot to put up evidence about the length of the barrel. The defense did. The prosecution forgot. So the jury instructions for that charge will be, if you find that that rifle was 16 inches or longer, then you must find the defendant not guilty. And he did get that into evidence when he asked Detective Antranium, the mayor's nephew, was it 16 inches or longer? He said yes. Was it a short-barreled rifle? He said no. So that's in evidence. In closing, they'll be sure to highlight that. So we could look at a full – we could be seeing a full acquittal, which would just be, you know, a cherry on top here, because a lot of us were thinking, you know, he might get that gun charge, but so ambiguous, you know, the jury might just find him guilty. But we're talking the curfew's been dismissed, which is nothing anyways. The gun charge is likely to be dismissed, and I don't think you're gonna find 12 people that are going to agree on murder or reckless endangerment for any of those scumbags. So the possibility of a full acquittal is upon us.
Yeah. So, and how are you doing for time? Because I got a couple more things I was going to go over with you. Are you good for time, or do you got?
I'm good for time. Sure.
So back to Kyle's Cross. This is where Binger just gets, I mean, bitch slapped by the judge. I mean, and it was. The judge, he wasn't, I accidentally described it as screaming. I was telling my fiance about it. I said, okay, wait, no, he wasn't screaming. He was shouting at, and I think that was a fair characterization. He shouted at the defense, the prosecution
in the courtroom,
attorney.
The microphones started to crack. You know, when you yell or sing into a microphone so
too
loud
much
that it
distorts.
Yeah. It was just the speakers in the courtroom were distorted, and all the media and folks hard of hearing who had those little earphones in were kind of like taking them out because their ears were bleeding. I mean, it was crazy.
When it seems to me like from my understanding or from my observation, it seems like there's two places that the jury goes. One is just a conference room very close to the courtroom, and another is upstairs, whatever that is. Is there any chance that conference room is close enough that with his loudest they could have heard him, or is it still
so that,
too far?
Yeah, so
from
that's
that?
That's the rambling within the courtroom. So in Judge Schrader's courtroom, that's the biggest courtroom. It's reserved for the most
high-profile
tenured judge. It's called the ceremonial courtroom. It's where they do all the swearings in and all that.
Yep.
Upstairs is where the jury goes to deliberate. They're far enough from the courtroom where they can't hear anything unless, I guess, you get a bullhorn. But where they were sent on this particular occasion is what he calls the library. So the library is a little conference area where the lawyers meet. That is only thing separating them from the courtroom is a door. And so there is speculation that the jury may have heard him yelling at Tom T. Claire. So, you know, I've talked to attorneys that say, no, they couldn't have heard him unless he was real loud. I've talked to attorneys that have said, yeah, I think you could probably hear him. So maybe that was his way of equalizing things, because it's hard to unring that bell, right?
Yep.
So when he says to Kyle, you know, isn't it true this is the first time you're telling your story?
You've had a year to watch all the videos and can't get your story, yeah.
Then you have the objection. Then the jury gets shuffled out of the room, you know, hastily, right? They're thinking, what the hell just happened, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, you'd like to think they don't look at the news, but some of them are. You know, you got to know that at least a few of them are looking at the news, and they probably saw that, and they probably said, okay, wow, Binger's really stretching here. But here's another thing, though. How do they know who he was yelling at? He could have been yelling at – I mean, I think it's reasonable that he was yelling at the person who was talking last when they were ushered out. But I hope if they did hear it, they knew he was yelling at T. Claire. But
yeah.
And then the second
well, that's
time – or
on.
That was the – Yeah, so that was the first time, and if you remember, the judge said...
And let's finish up on that just for listeners. See,
sure.
The reason, because a defendant's silence cannot be used against them. And
correct.
And so even when a person chooses not to testify, every judge will instruct the jury that they chose not to testify, but that you can't hold, they shouldn't be judged on that. Now, we all know they still do. But they're instructed not to. They're instructed not to let the fact that they chose not to testify, that should not be construed as guilt or anything. You know, it shouldn't be held against them. But so that's when Binger comes in here and starts painting this picture that, oh, you've had a year to sit here and watch all the videos and change your story to whatever fits. Like, that's why he's on this way across the bounds on constitutional grounds. And then the people on Court TV were just blowing up on this. They're like, that's like law 101, that what Binger was doing.
That's like pre-law in high school.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the first thing. And so, he gets slapped down by the judge for that. And then the second one, which you were just going to go into, was the pretrial hearings. They had said that there was things they couldn't admit. The video where Kyle was sitting outside of CVS and made just an offhand remark about some shoplifters and, oh, I wish I had my gun here I'd shoot him or something. Binger starts going down that road, which the judge had already ruled that he couldn't. And then that's when, I mean, again, the judge just shouting at Binger. And I mean, I couldn't help but think that if I was a juror, I would have been on Court TV that night wanting to know what the judge said.
I mean, absolutely. And the thing is, too, it was an other acts motion that was brought many months before the trial. And the judge, this judge particularly, doesn't like finality, right? So in this motion about bringing up the CVS video incident, he said, you know, I'm going to hold it open with a bias against allowing it in. And as you know, it's not everything is good unless the judge tells you no. It's everything is off limits unless the judge tells you yes, especially something so remote in time and completely different incident. And that's why they call it other acts, because it's nothing to do directly with this. So in order to get an other acts motion granted, it has to be close in time and circumstances. It has to, quote, bear the defendant's signature. And this is something completely different. This is, he didn't even have his gun on him. So what I think, it's a 17-year-old kid who has kind of his own AR-15, and he wants whoever he's with to kind of know that. Like, oh, I wish I had my AR-15. I'd start, you know, popping rounds at him. It's something that's said in jest by a 17-year-old kid, for fuck's sake. It's not, you know, somebody who really wants to carry out. And they called the police, you know. So the judge did not allow it, right? He did not allow that topic. And so what T. Clair did was he started bringing it up, and he said to Kyle, you know, you can't defend property with lethal force, right? And Kyle said yes. And he said, well, isn't it true that you had said before you wish you had your AR-15 so that you could defend property with lethal force? And he got the question out, you know, so the old saying is you can't unring the bell, right? So the jury heard that. There was an objection. They got ushered out into the library right next to the courtroom. And now this is a lawyer that was just told you're at the line or you may have already passed the line, right?
Yep.
And now he does something that definitely, definitely put him over that line, because – you know, another instruction is the judge is going to say you are to assume nothing based on a question that was asked that wasn't answered. So, you know, if the prosecutor would ask Kyle, isn't it true that you also own, you know, a bazooka? And let's say there's an objection, they got sent out, the question was never answered. They're not supposed to assume that Kyle has a bazooka just because the stupid question was asked. Same thing with these two questions, but like you said, they're going to be curious. They're going to say, "Well, shit, did this kid really, you know, use his gun to try to deter somebody from damaging property?" You know, and maybe they look it up on Court TV, or maybe they look it up online and they say, "Oh, well, he was at CVS, you know, 2 weeks earlier, threatening to shoot some shoplifters. That could hurt him." And that's why the judge excluded it, because it would be a bias.
Very prejudicial,
you know?
Yeah.
Prejudicial. So in this case, I think this is an old wise judge, and just got off the phone with an attorney friend of mine, and I asked him about this, and I said, you know, when is it too late for the judge to declare a mistrial with prejudice or a judgment, you know, notwithstanding the verdict? He can do that at any time. So if the jury gets it wrong somehow and finds him guilty of one of these lesser charges or something, the judge could, he's got a series of things he could do. He could overturn their verdict and issue a judgment notwithstanding the verdict. He could declare a mistrial and let Kyle get another chance to defend himself. Or he could issue a mistrial with prejudice. That would mean the state can't retry. They can only appeal it to the Court of Appeals. And I think if we're in that situation, I don't think D.A. Gravely wants any more egg on his face. I mean, he's the laughingstock of the world, as well as T. Claire and the Penguin. But it's just one of those things where there's still some tricks up somebody's sleeve here. And, you know, I think both of those, one or the other could be argued either way, but both of them, I think it's pretty clear that, you know, and nobody wants a second trial. Kyle, you know, who knows if he's got the money.
Well, that's what I was
going to
say. Mistrial or hung jury, does this get tried again?
Yeah, and that's, and I this is the thing that I've been talking with all my attorneys that I work for. Hey, what do you think? And, you know, some of them say, no, if it's a mistrial, Gravely is going to be happy to have this over with and done. And he'll make some statement to the press, like, you know, we're going to take a good look at, you know, the evidence and see if we can prove this. And he'll wait 6 months because he's just a dick like that, you know, last minute. And then he'll schedule a press conference and he'll say, you know, we've come to the conclusion, unfortunately, although we think what Mr. Rittenhouse did that night was terrible and the loss of life and, you know, there's nothing we can do to bring these victims back. But unfortunately, we have come to the conclusion that we cannot prove this case, right? So they won't say, you know, we were wrong, we screwed up, we made a mistake. They'll frame it in a way that says, look, we really want to and we think we should, but we can't prove the case. That's what I'm thinking you'll see here. And I'm thinking you'll see him just be so happy to just wash his hands of this because it's just turned out to be such a mess. I mean, these yeah. attorneys are calling the DA's office to try to, you know, talk to somebody on their case, and they're just answering the phone so scared because they're getting all these people calling and on both sides, right? They're getting the liberal left saying, oh, you guys suck. How dare you? You know, you can't get a conviction. You suck. You know, you should have charged them with worse or blah, blah, blah. And then you got folks on the right that are calling to voice their displeasure with his charging decision. So, I mean, it's just such a mess over there right now. You got death threats going around, people doxing T. Claire's address, which I think is wrong, even though I think he's an incompetent, unethical boob. I think it's still not right to use, you know, his, you know, he wanted, remember when he wanted Kyle's address to be public?
Right.
That's kind of like sweet irony there, but I don't think it's the right thing to do to encourage violence. That's not what we're about on the right.
I was going to go through a couple other witnesses here real quick, just see if you had anything to add to them. There was a videographer from Arizona who seemed like a really good guy.
Oh, I love that guy.
Yeah. I mean, I thought he was up to the task. He was sharp. He didn't let them put words in his mouth. He was just very, very well spoken. I don't know if you had anything else to add for him. I just thought he was fantastic.
Yeah, he was kind of like my hero for that day because he just, any chance he got to say Antifa or BLM or rioters or looters, he took full chance. He took every opportunity to say that, and I got such a kick out of him. And they were talking about, you know, Binger asked him if he had an attorney and why he hired an attorney. The judge says, you know, sent the jury out. What does this matter? He says, well, the attorney he hired is the same attorney that worked for one of the experts. So it's a conflict. And the judge says, okay, I'll let it in. And so the jury came back in. He says, oh, didn't you hire an attorney from Madison that's the same attorney as one of the defense experts? And he says, well, actually, yes, but I didn't know that until now. So how could that possibly be bias? You know, he said something like that. And I'm thinking, this guy. This is a guy that does not like these slimy prosecutors, and
he said,
that's
yeah,
why,
just inter- to interrupt you for a second, when Binger would say, I know, when you keep calling them rioters, and he's like, because that's what they were. I thought, that's going to play well for the jury, because the jury is from Kenosha. They were there. They know what these people were doing. And so for him to just state the obvious is just going to endear him as a witness to the jury, because and not endear Binger, because Binger is still trying to not acknowledge the word riot and tiptoe around riot when that's what they were. And everybody there knows what they were. And then Binger would even say later, you know, how the defense is characterized as rioters or looters or what, not that they were, the defense is characterized as rioters, looters, which again, the jury was all there. They know who these people were. And so you should just call them that too, and let that be endear you to the jury that you're having an honest conversation versus not. And they could look at the facts of the case that you, but again, there are no facts of the case that support Binger's position. So he's got to, you know, try to make it about something else. And the whole idea around, oh, if you support Black Lives Matter and this, that this, you know, it just to cloud the issue, make it something about some bigger thing is the only way Binger can have these people come against him. The use of force expert I thought was good. I was expecting different testimony. I must have not caught the pretrial hearings enough. The use of force expert, and maybe this is what he was not allowed. I thought he was going to say that Kyle was justified because of, you know, this would be imminent. This would be, you know, if I was judging this as, you know, in my use of force analyses. And I didn't hear that testimony. It was just timing. And was that the part that wasn't allowed?
Right. So Dr. Black has a few expertises, his main one being a use of force expert. But the T. Claire was able to convince the judge that it's not really appropriate here because there's a different threshold between a citizen and a police officer, even though I don't think there should be. Why should a police officer have more of a right of self-defense than a citizen? But so the judge ended up ruling that he can be used for his other expertise, which was photography/video/editing, pixels, all that stuff. So that's why you heard those 3 painful hours about pixels. And you know what? The jury would have been taking a nap at this point if they were allowed to. They did not give a shit about any of that. Yeah. And a lot of people are making a big deal about it, this mystery pixelated. Then, you know, this guy, the state crime lab guy, told the jury that he spent 20 hours manipulating this photo to try to see if it showed Kyle pointing a gun or not at Zeminski, who, by the way, was holding a gun in his hand most of the night. So I don't give a shit if Kyle was pointing a gun at him. I wish Kyle would have shot that guy too, you know, to be honest with you. I mean, he was just, he may have started this whole thing by shooting the gun in his air. And he's a wife-beating, career violent criminal scumbag, you know. So he's lucky he didn't get himself killed. And so they're saying, well, since he pointed a gun at Zeminski, he provoked Rosenbaum, which is just preposterous. It's a stupid, nonsensical assertion, right?
Yeah.
And Zeminski was at the trial, but he was subpoenaed by both sides, but he has the Fifth Amendment right. He didn't have to testify, and he didn't.
And Zeminski's he's going to be tried for arson, correct?
Yeah, and thank God he's got Schrader as his judge. So Schrader is a fair judge, so Zeminski will get a fair trial, but let's put it simply. There's photos and videos of him starting shit on fire. So Zeminski is dead in the water, and you know what? This is one of those cases when I looked up the maximums for, you know, arson of a non-building, disorderly conduct with the enhancer of a dangerous weapon and obstruction. I could see Schrader maxing him out, which would just bring joy to my heart. And remember, his wife, who was running around starting shit on fire with him, she's in prison right now. So this guy's out there drinking 4 Locos, right, and hanging out on the street corners. And his wife is in prison. Why? Because she was on probation for retail theft during the riots. Her probation officer revoked her probation. Now she's sitting in prison while Josh is just roaming the streets right now. So it's just kind of interesting how the wheels of justice work. But he'll be joining her real soon, and that'll be a fun day for Kenosha.
Another witness that I didn't think was the biggest deal, but yet, so there was a very attractive female cop from Kenosha.
#BabeCop
that gets called by the defense, and I liked her from the word go, because I got the feeling that, okay, she's called by the defense, but she works for the, she's a police officer. And so because police, DA, they all work together, she has to, she's kind of a reluctant witness, but yet she didn't take herself too seriously. And she, so she didn't really want to be there, but yet at the same point, she's going to answer the questions. The thing that really endeared me to her is someone said, okay, and if someone shoots and a round didn't eject, yeah, and you pull the trigger, she said, just real deadpan, she's like, it goes click, not bang, or something like that.
You may have missed what she said in the beginning, but which made me automatically think she was cool, is she was asking, are you familiar with, you know, the AR-15 style rifles? And she said, yeah. The defense attorney says, well, tell me how. Well, she says, well, I own some. I use some at work. I qualify with them. I'm like, okay, this chick is cool. She owns AR-15s, right? So
I heard the question. I didn't hear her particular answer on that. But
you would have remembered that. So that's how I know you missed it. So anyways, she was called because she's the one who actually picked up the shells. And, you know, Gage was talking about how he re-racked the gun, which – if that is true, wow, then that's certainly, you know, and I'm a Christian. I believe in God. And, you know, I think there may have been some divine intervention because Kyle shot straight and he did exactly what he needed to do to stay alive. He didn't hit any innocent victims. He just did exactly what he needed to do. And if Gage is telling the truth, which I don't think so, and Kyle really did re-rack, imagine as a guy's coming towards you with a pistol aimed at your face and you had time to re-rack and then shoot the guy, man, is he some kind of special, like, elite, you know, ninja of firearms handling. I mean, but he didn't. And so that the point of getting her up there to say, you know, how many shells did you find? This is how many shells I found. Can you count them? Yes, she counted them. Were there any live rounds that you found? No. They just needed to get on that in the record. So during closing, they can say, look,
right,
Gage is lying. Let me start at the beginning. This, and then at some point they're going to say, Gage said he saw Kyle re-rack the round, and if that were true, Officer Babcock would have found a live round, and she didn't.
Yep. Yeah, so I thought she was good. She was a police officer. Her testimony was good for the defense, and then she was damn good looking.
exactly. Yeah, so, you know, she was in the hallway. She was in plain clothes, which suggested it was her day off because she's just a patrol officer. And, you know, she presented herself well, and I think she was looking forward to testifying. You know, this is purely speculation, but I think in my mind, I think she's a right-leaning, pro-gun, pro-freedom young woman, and I think she was excited to go do her part to help the defense. That's just all speculation, but go ahead.
When I say slightly reluctant, I meant that because of her position, she wasn't supposed to be on the defense side, so just slightly reluctant. But yet, if she was trying to be some stuffy whatever, she just said, well, if you would have done that, it would have failed to discharge around, and instead of, you know, but instead she said, no, it goes click, not bang. And I just thought, she's not taking herself too serious and just, you know, being, she was cool. She was cool.
You know, I was really surprised there was not more. I was surprised she wasn't trending on Twitter. I think it's just because her testimony was so brief. But if she would have been up there for an hour, Twitter would have been just inundated with, you know, Babe Cop. That's the hashtag I saw that I thought was funny.
So I talked to the Wisconsin Carry Board of Directors over the weekend, and now I don't think this is going to happen. But if Kyle was to – if the one – because I – so Dan O'Donnell on WISN, who just – I wanted to spit at the radio on Friday because I heard that in the car. I wasn't near a TV, so I couldn't watch the trial, but I listened to Dan O'Donnell's commentary, and I just wanted to – he basically said that he thinks that the gun charge is the one thing that Kyle's guilty of. And I'm like, Dan O'Donnell always talks about how he's not an attorney, but he's got a law degree. And that's the one thing – Dan, did you not go read – about the gun charge? And he should be the one saying, well, this is what Wisconsin law is, because there's other attorneys on the internet who've gone through that analysis and come to the conclusion that Kyle was not illegally possessing a gun. I talked with the board of directors. I said, hey, if Kyle is convicted of the gun charge, I mean, I assume that his attorneys would probably appeal that. And then Wisconsin Carry, we already decided that we'd file an amicus brief if he does. But based upon what you're saying, I don't think that that's even likely that he's going to get convicted on the gun charge based upon the jury instructions. But
and if the jury, I think that's one that's very likely. If the jury gets wrong and they think, well, you know, maybe the law ought they'll be thinking maybe the law ought to be have to be 18 to walk around with a gun. But and Schrader said, he said, look, maybe this law, maybe the legislative intent was something different, maybe not. He said, but it's up to the legislator to make sure that a plain reading of these, it's easy to understand. And it's not easy to understand. So, you know, every legislature right now in Madison is essentially condoning the law as written. Because if they're not changing it, that must mean they agree with it, right?
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
So, if they get this wrong, I could see the judge tossing that and saying, you know what, I told you you had to find him guilty only if you could, if there was evidence that it was shorter than 16 inches. There was no such evidence. You can look through the thousands of pages of transcripts. There's nothing in there about it being a short-barreled rifle. Period. And in fact, the contrary, the detective testified it was not a short-barreled rifle.
Yeah, I was so frustrated. So Friday, I'm driving down to the marina, and I was cleaning my boat for the last time in the warehouse, and so I couldn't watch TV. I was just listening to Dan O'Donnell, and he's sitting there saying how, you know, yes, Kyle was acting in self-defense. I think all the evidence supports that, but no, let's, you know, Kyle should have never been there. Kyle injected himself in the situation. You know, he made things worse. I mean, Dan O'Donnell was just going off, just this sanctimonious, sure. And I was, I'm going on Vicki McKenna's show tomorrow, because I texted Vicki, and I'm like, Vicki, someone has to push back against this narrative, because I mean, I think that I chose not to go to Kenosha that night. I mean, honestly, just because I was busy. I mean, it's a Tuesday during the week. I'm super busy, but, right. But I would never criticize Kyle for what he did or anybody else who went there. I think some people came down from West Bend. One of the witnesses came down from West Bend or something. And yeah. And I mean, I was just so irritated that, like, there's so many bigger implications here. Like, and Dan O'Donnell said, look, if it was your house or your neighbor, okay. But, you know, I thought, you know, because of what Kyle did, lives may very likely have been saved that night. And not even that night, but bigger picture, Antifa and BLM and all these people that flood to these places, because of what Kyle did, they'll think twice that it's not just, hey, we're going to go and have fun and it's all our, we own the streets. No, you guys go and you start, you know, the Second Amendment still lives. Now, if Kyle's acquitted, I think that will even, I wish in any other county, Walworth, Washington, Waukesha County, Kyle's not even charged with a crime. And then sure. I think that would have been a tremendous chilling of this rush to riot, because it reminds these rioters that, nope, you know, the good guys still have the law on their side here. The good guys still have self-defense on their side here. So it would have been nice if Kyle wouldn't have even been charged because he was charged. But I still think it may have tamped down some of this, some of the rioting, some of the mob behavior, because people did have to think twice. Hey, it's not just fun and games. Hey, let's go have fun and riot and wild for the night. You know, chase someone, attack someone, you know, hit someone who's just trying to put out a fire at their mattress store with a brick. I mean, we may end up dead, shot, you know, in self-defense, yep. and they're in the right. But then, you know, so Kyle's acquittal, Kyle did, I think lives, they may have been saved that night. Not just Kyle, all the armed people there that night, if they wouldn't have been there, we don't know how many people may have died in arsons for these work businesses that had apartments over them. You know, it's possible that lives were saved. So when Dan O'Donnell says, you know, no one died except for the ones that Kyle shot. I went to reach for the radio and just smacked.
Wait,
Dan
he
O'Donnell,
said that?
But, oh yeah. He said,
hey,
you know,
that guy used to be a solid conservative. Has he changed over the years or what?
So he's, I've never thought of him as a solid conservative, because remember when he was filling in for Vicki McKenna one time, and on her show, maybe this wasn't for filling in, but let me check that. He may have had his own show at this time, but when the Bucks were working on, or he may have been filling in, but when the Bucks were working on their new, were trying to get public money for their new stadium, he went on the radio and he started, because he's a big Bucks fan, and he started talking about how the Bucks getting public money was the free market at work. And I thought, are you kidding me, kid? Like, that is the farthest thing from the free market. Well, the Bucks are the, it's a free market at work because the Bucks are so large of an organization that they have the power to ask the legislature for this. And for that reason, it's the free market at work. I thought, my God, you kid, you just twist your principles to fit your desires instead of twisting your desires to fit your principles. So he's always, when it was, the Dontray Hamilton thing in Milwaukee, who was shot at Red Arrow Park. He's like, Dontray Hamilton, who was beating a cop with his baton, shot. And I thought, you know, he must have said that a thousand times. That's how he treats the story. Dontray Hamilton, who was beating a cop, who was shot because he was beating a cop with a baton. The cop was beating Dontray Hamilton with his baton. Dontray Hamilton, a mentally retarded guy, took the baton out of the cop's hand and then started hitting the cop with it. But he never put that perspective there. So I've never quite trusted Dan O'Donnell. He's got, some of his stuff is really good. He's a really good researcher, but I've never quite trusted him. And he's the biggest brown noser. That guy sticks his nose so far up politicians' rears. If it's a female, I mean, he could Eskimo kiss their ovaries. And if it's a guy, their prostate. But I mean, he is just a butt kisser when it comes to politics. And I thought it was because he's young and he was new and now he's got his own show. Maybe he would kind of come into his own, be a little bit more bold. But I don't trust him as far as I can kick him. And he's starting to strike me as this sanctimonious, you know, his commentary on Friday was it's not like the last straw for me, but like, he's not a solid principled conservative. I think he's now that likes to be popular, and that desire to be popular takes you away from being able to be objective and start going for things that I think some of the problem that some of these talking heads have with Trump is that they don't like having to make excuses for supporting Trump. They want someone that they can feel proud to support, that they don't have to, which you're never going to get. You're never going to go to your little dinner parties and all these things that you get invited to as a conservative. If you have a Republican of any kind of effectiveness, they're going to be hated. Scott Walker was a choir boy and he was hated by the left. I mean, that guy was squeaky clean. They turned him into Hitler. And so as a conservative, I think that's the thing. Some people, well, I want Trump's policies without his personality. No, because if you have a politician who has the policies, he's going to be hated and demonized, and you won't be all popular with your going to your kids' soccer games and people thinking, oh, that conservative. Like some conservatives always seem to want to feel accepted by the soccer mom crowd at their kids' soccer games. And you're never going to get that. And so I feel like Dan's now at that point where he's trying to, well, yeah, Kyle was legally right, but he should have never been there. And just because I think he thinks I think he truly believes that, but that's just that sanctimonious lack of true embracing of the Second Amendment. Another time when someone called the show and said, this was after, I don't know if it was the bump stock thing, but someone said, maybe it was, I'm trying to remember, but it was someone made the comment that about Trump, you know, raising the age for owning a gun to 21 instead of for long guns, shotguns, and rifles to 21 from 18. And Dan's like, someone's like, yeah, these kids, you know, they're still eating Tide Pods. I mean, that's a no brainer to raise the age to 21. And Dan guffaws. He's like, yeah, for sure. And it just, he's super squishy on gun stuff. So yeah, I don't trust
21. That's stupid.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and Dan was
just recently learned you can't buy a cigar or a pack of cigarettes until you're 21 now. When the hell did that happen?
Yeah, that was Trump's doing too. Trump pushed that one. And so, yeah, I mean, but it's just, but the bigger implications of here, I mean, you know, for Dan O'Donnell to not realize that, his sanctimonious perch, he thinks Kyle shouldn't have been there, but Dan O'Donnell's not going to go help to protect business. And he's stupid if you think you can protect your own business and your own home. I mean, look at CarSource, because that's what Dan said. He's like, look, if it's your house or your neighbor, okay. CarSource, three locations, two owners. How are they going to protect three locations with two owners? If you live in Kenosha and you have a business in Kenosha, then you got your home and your business. You can't be in two places at once. You're going to need people from outside the community to come help you. And there's not a lot of volunteers. Everybody in the city is going to be protecting their own home. So there's not a lot of volunteers. You need people to come from. And Dan found that offensive. You know, and then he had a caller who took issue with him. And he said, oh, well, so to his caller, you know, when you saw what was going on in Chaz in Portland, did that bother you? And the caller's like, yeah. And he goes, well, did you get on a plane and fly to Portland? Like that was some kind of moral, but there's a difference between flying to Portland and driving 20 minutes to go to Kenosha to help. It was just a jackass comment that Dan O'Donnell made. But that sentiment's out there. And, you know, I wouldn't do what Kyle did. I mean, honestly, because I've got people could sue me. I got millions of dollars of assets. I don't want to lose those. I can't afford, you know, but God bless Kyle for what he did. You know, God bless Kyle for having that. And anybody who did all the people that went there to help that went armed to help protect businesses. God bless them. Even though I chose not to, you'll never see me throw shade on someone who did, someone who made a different choice. So I don't know. That's what I think. I'm going on Vicky's show tomorrow and I'm going to share some more angles there, but I believe Kyle had the legal and the moral high ground. And I reject that a 17-year-old should be at home, that whole 17-year-old should be at home line. You know, when a young liberal does something big and bold and civil disobedience, they're glorified and praised.
Like,
and they're wise.
Isn't Greta the same age as Kyle?
Yeah, and they're wise beyond their years. And that David Hogue or whatever is from Florida, you know, they're wise beyond their years. But yet when Kyle risks his safety for what he believes in, oh, he's naive, he's young, he's immature, he should have been at home. Where's the parents? I mean, it's so hypocritical and such a double standard. But, you know, so if conservatives don't stand up for self-defense and for Kyle's moral right to do what he did and be where he was, I think we're snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. Because if Kyle's acquitted, it's a big victory. But if we're going to say, okay, yeah, he was legal, but he still shouldn't – yeah, it was self-defense, but he still shouldn't have been there. Again, we're snatching defeat from the jaws of victory, because that's some dangerous notions that Binger was putting forward in this case, that you can't use force to protect property. You can use force to protect property. You can't use deadly force to protect property, but you can use force to protect property. And then Binger even said, I think you can't threaten deadly force. I believe that as I read the statute, you can threaten deadly force to protect property. You just can't, because it says it right in the statute. I've gone through that before. But so there's a lot of warped, that's my worry, is that what comes out of this case, even if Kyle's acquitted, the net result of what comes out of this case is don't ever do something like that again. Don't ever have people go if the next Kenosha, wherever it is, if it's, you know, cop shoot someone in Janesville, don't ever go to Janesville to help. Don't ever arm citizens. And we have to push back against that, because this is a victory if we can put an end to this lawlessness, if we stand up for self-defense and for people's moral right to be there, and have more people go do it next time. Have more people go to help. Because if protecting people's livelihoods in riots isn't a morally right thing to do, even if it means coming from out of town, whether you're 17 or whether you're 38 or whether you're 50 coming from, you know, five counties, three counties away, if a law-abiding citizen did get on a plane and go to Portland to help protect businesses, that's morally right. And so, you know, I don't know. That's what I worry, is that just this this dangerous notion that even though Kyle was right, he was legal, but he wasn't right. You know, that's what I hear conservatives pushing, and that's what I think I'm worried about is the defense.
I'm guilty of saying that a few times where I wish he wasn't there, but I'm talking from the perspective of a father. You know, my son right now is 11 years old, but if he was 17, I wouldn't have let him go out there.
And that's the same with me. Yeah. But
to say that he had no right to be there, or, you know, or something like that, I take issue with. I mean, and this is what Balt said. Kyle had no more or no less right to be there than anybody else, is really what it comes down to. If he was my son, you know, if my son was 17, I'd handcuff him to them. I mean, I don't want him going down there.
If my stepson, if he'd have said he's 20 now, and if he'd have said, hey, Nick, can I borrow a gun and go down there? I'd have said, no, you shouldn't go anywhere near it. But
well, you've seen The Patriot with Mel Gibson, right?
I've seen it.
It's about the Revolutionary War, and he had two sons. One was 17 and one was like 13. A 17-year-old enlisted. he really wanted to go fight in the war. And then his 13-year-old says, hey, I'm going, Dad. And the dad says, no, when you're old enough. Well, the son ended up sneaking out and joining anyways. And that's how I see Kyle, is he was a kid who just desperately wanted to help. And no one was going to stop him. He wanted to help Kenosha, and that's what he did. And he had every right to be there. If he was my kid, though, I would have handcuffed him to something inside the house just because, you know, I wouldn't want my kid there. But that being said, he had every right to be there.
Yeah. And I was the same. I would do the same with my stepson. I said, no, you're not going. And, but then again, he's 20. I mean, he could legally do what he wants. And but it's almost even a little bit selfish because I think someone needed to go, you know, I'm glad someone did. So again, I call myself a little bit selfish that I'm glad that other people went that I didn't, you know, because everybody has something to lose. Well, obviously look at Kyle. I mean, he's
you have the right to go, you also have the right not to go, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and look at all the 18-year-olds that signed up, high school seniors that signed up for the military after 9/11, it just moved them to want to act. And, and that said, if Kyle was a couple months older, like there, that's why this whole, and why I talk about he had a moral right to be there. And it's just, if Kyle was a couple months older and he was 18, then the whole narrative kind of shifts too. And it's like, so you're going to, just because of a couple months, it went from, and I'm talking about these people that are just hypercritical of the fact that Kyle was there and where were the parents and all that stuff. But so then, and of course I do believe that it was legal for him to carry that gun, but that said, you know, 2 months difference. Yeah. That's a difference in terms of malum prohibitum. I mean, versus malum in se. Yeah, right. It was against, you know, 18. You're not adult till you're 18, but that's really just an arbitrary number. Does 2 months make something morally right or morally wrong? If he'd have been a couple months later, he would have been 18. You know, no, it doesn't. So yeah, so we got closing arguments Monday. Then the jury will get the case Monday night or Tuesday.
So this is what the lawyers guess. So tomorrow morning. There may, at 8 o'clock, there may be one or two housekeeping issues, which I hope they're not too burdensome. Then the judge will be instructing the jury probably by 9 a.m. is my guess.
So the jury gets instructed before closing arguments?
Correct. And I like it that way. Some judges sometimes switch it around. I don't think it's statutory required, the order, but 90% of the judges, they do instructions and then closings, because technically closings are not evidence. So it's just the arguments. So my guess is around 9 o'clock, you'll start the instructions. The judge estimated 45 minutes for instructions. I've been told by a couple lawyers that's wishful thinking. So let's say an hour 15 for instructions. So 10:15. I think what you'll have is you'll have late lunch. So I think you'll have the prosecution go till about noon, 12:30. And then I think coming back from lunch at 12:45, you'll have a defense go to, what is that, 3-something. And then you'll have the rebuttal, which will probably be a half hour. So the jury might only have an hour to deliberate tomorrow night. And then their first full day of deliberation will be Tuesday.
Got it. So my prediction is full acquittal on everything, no lesser charges, or hung jury. What do you handicap this one
so
out?
If I kind of do a pie chart, I'd say probably 80% hung jury, 19.999% full acquittal, and then whatever's left over is guilty, and that's decimal, a bunch of zeros and a one for guilty.
We don't like to think about it, but if he's found guilty, plenty of grounds for appeals.
Oh yeah, I mean, the lowest hanging fruit would be the fact that those two questions that were one prohibited by the U.S. Constitution, for fuck's sake, and the other one prohibited by a pre-court ruling, both of them, the full question got out to the jury. So in a brief, that's very easy to say that prejudiced the jury big time.
Yeah.
In a situation in which they were specifically kept out, the Constitution being our forefathers and the court order being the judge. because they deemed that if they went in, the defendant would be unduly, what's the word you used before, prejudiced or whatever.
Prejudice, yeah.
Yeah, so I think there's some low-hanging appeal fruit, but here's the thing, too, is that it's a referendum on self-defense. If somehow this kid is, yep. is found guilty, there's going to be people out there, I promise you, that will be in fear for their life. They might be carrying a gun, and they're going to think, you know what? I don't want to go to prison. Maybe I'll just hope I survive this, hope yep. I come out alive somehow. And yeah. that's going to be a scary, scary thought.
Right.
And,
right.
But I don't see that happening here. I think you have reasonable jurors. And, you know, our system is not perfect, but it's the best in the world.
Last question for you, because I've heard this sentiment expressed among some cynical, and I don't not this is not a pejorative comment when I call people cynical. We have every right to be cynical. But people sure. that were worried, I've heard a couple people say they're worried that the jury is going to be afraid to issue. I just afraid to find him not guilty. I just don't sense the tenor of because I think the Atlanta Ahmaud Arbery thing has sucked all the race hustlers out of the down to Florida, or excuse me, down to Atlanta. Do you feel like fear of riots or whatever would stop the jury? Do you get that sense that the jury would feel peer pressure to find guilty for their own safety kind of concerns?
You know, I don't see that happening. I can see it maybe being somewhere in the back of their head, but the judge has assured this jury several times. And this is a judge who's been district attorney, he's been a prosecutor, and he's been a sitting judge for more than 40 years. I mean, this is longer than I've been alive, right? He told the jury a couple times, look, I've been a judge for 40 years and never seen anybody go after a juror, never seen anybody go after a judge, never seen anybody going after a prosecutor, a police officer. It could happen, of course. So can a tree fall over and crush you dead while you're walking down the sidewalk. But it's not something that happens often. So I think he's able to reassure the jury somewhat that it's not a super rational fear. You got these idiots who are saying, you know, let's target the jury, whatever. But in this case, I think when you have 12 people, you're going to have people of integrity that are going to say, you know, people are going to speak up and be leaders in that jury deliberation room. And if you or I were in there, you can only imagine that we'd be the one stepping up saying, hey, look, are we really that worried about our own personal safety that we're going to put some kid in prison for protecting his life? Because if you can't protect your life from people that are trying to kill you, we no longer have self-defense.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and no, I agree with that. And I think that, I mean, Kyle's a very sympathetic defendant. I think everybody, you know, he's a nice kid. He comes off as a nice kid. I mean, and naivete is not a reason to want to have ill feelings toward a young man who's, you know, did what Kyle did. So naive, perhaps, did he get in over his head? Yeah. You know, judgment, you know, some would say yes, some would say no. In retrospect, of course, he would probably wish he didn't go there that night, or maybe not. You know, I mean, that said, I think in 5 years, there's a good possibility. I mean, Kyle seems like a principled guy, and we'll maybe say this for next week's show. Next week, maybe we'll do one wrap up show if you got time for it. But yeah. Where does it go from here? I mean, Kyle seems like a young, passionate guy. I think he's got a platform. I think he might turn into a Joe the Plumber likes kind of little conservative celebrity. Who knows where he goes from here? But I think he may look back in 5 years and say, you know, that was a unbelievable thing I went through, but I'm a better person for it. And he won't regret it. I mean, I think that's, I've gone through some really shitty things in my life. And then I'm like, you know what? And it sucked when it happened, but now I look back and say, I wouldn't erase that from my experiences. It was a net positive. Sure. I learned so much and whatever. So, all right, Kevin, well, I appreciate your time again. Fingers crossed that the right thing happens here. And hopefully when we talk next Sunday, we'll be enjoying the triumph of the Second Amendment and self-defense.
And I think if things go the way we want them to go, I might do next Sunday's podcast from my back porch with a big stogie in my mouth and with my feet up.
That would be appropriate. I don't even drink on Sundays. I drink a little bit on Friday and a little more on Saturday, but I might have a drink while we do it. So, all right, Kevin, thanks so much. Have a great night.
All right, Nick, have a good week.
Talk to you next week. Yep, talk to you
soon. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. So Kevin Mathewson, editor of the Kenosha County Eye and criminal investigator down in Kenosha. So, yeah, so that's the show for this week. We'll see what – I was very unproductive. I get a little bit unproductive in the spring when the Masters is on because I like to watch the Masters online on Thursday and Friday before the weekend comes and it's the final rounds of the Masters. But so I've been distracted all week, last week watching the Rittenhouse case, and that'll be the case for Monday and Tuesday. Well, Tuesday I'll just be jury watch, so there won't be anything to watch, but yeah, I'll watch Monday's closings. So thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you guys for catching the show live here, and to the people that catch it on podcast, again, thanks for tuning in. And here I said I was going to take calls, and I never took calls. It got so late. We got 6 minutes left in the feed. So you guys have a great week. Carry on and be well armed.
Sniper Chick Julie, you've been listening to Well Armed Radio, and I have to know, is that a gun in your pants, or did you just really enjoy the show?
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.